Welcome to SportsWise, a podcast about sports and the law with your host, me, Gabe Feldman, director of the Tulane Sports Law Program and co-director of the Tulane Center for Sport. On this very special episode of the pod, I'm joined by Dan Patrick, not the Dan Patrick, but my friends Dan Wright and Patrick Egan, to talk all of the latest developments in sports and the law, including college sports back in Congress, the Knicks versus the Raptors back in court, the NBA's load management problem, the future of sports television, and much more. Here we go. Welcome to the podcast, Patrick Egan and Dan Wright. How are you guys?
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, doing great.
Okay. Dan, are you doing okay? You didn't really answer my question.
I'm doing wonderful.
Okay. Thank you. All right, good.
And Gabe, if I may, I would like you to thank you for having us.
Oh, you're welcome, Patrick. I appreciate that. Let me skip the pleasantries and the bios, other than to say that, Patrick, you are a Williams College alum, correct?
True.
Dan, yep. You're a Bates College alum.
Correct.
Ooh. The Williams College are the Fighting Eaves. Do I have that right?
We don't say fighting anymore. We're just the Eaves. That's correct.
The Eaves. Dan, what's the Bates College mascot?
The Bobcats.
The Bates Bobcats. Did Bates ever play Williams when you were there?
All the time. A fierce NESCAC rival.
Oh, all right. Look at that. Okay. So for those of you who don't... go ahead.
What sport are we talking about? Just play them generally?
I was thinking, are they just more broadly, are they rivals? Education, yes. Academic rivals?
Maybe not quite.
I think Bates's it was inferior athletically and academically to Williams. So I'm not sure rivals is quite the word.
The thing is, these are both small, highly selected private schools. I think just 500 alum. So this is going to be great content for all of the Bates and Williams listeners.
This is really topical.
That Bates is a Williams safety school, I think.
There's going to be such a spike in Northeast private school listeners to this. I know a lot of people called me and texted me and said, Gabe, what I'd really like for the beginning of your podcast is I don't want you to get right into the sports law stuff. I want you to banter with your friends, tell some inside jokes that nobody else will get. That's what I'm looking for. Like smart list, but with people we don't know that aren't famous. I think we pulled it off.
Mission accomplished.
That's a pretty compelling tagline there for the podcast.
All right. First question. It was revealed minutes ago. Lionel Messi's salary with Inter Miami for this year. You have promised that you don't know the answer to this. Take your guess what he is making this year from Inter Miami. Dan, you can go first.
I actually was talking about this with my son yesterday, and we were guessing, but neither of us took the time to actually Google the answer. And our guess was $70 million a year.
$70 million a year. Okay. Patrick.
My one question, and I admit I don't know
who Lionel Messi is. He's a very well-known soccer player.
Okay. Is he better than that Redondo Beach guy? He's really good. Is Alexi Lalas still out there doing his thing? Because I always appreciate it.
Messi is the Kobe Jones of the current generation.
Oh, okay. What I don't know is how far along in the season they were, because I feel like he joined in medias res, if you will. But I'm going to say, I'm going to say annualized, not what's he making for the eight games or whatever he might have played. I think his annualized salary is $150 million.
Wow. All right. So Dan guessed $70 million. Patrick guessed $150 million. I've already forgotten. Your guess was so bad that I blacked it out.
I don't even know. You said Kobe Jones and I just got into my head.
Maybe I misread this, but I'm being told that his annual salary is $20 million.
Oh.
Wow. I feel like I may be, but not only that, but that $20 million is more than the combined payrolls of most MLS teams and is in fact twice as much as FC Orlando's combined payroll.
Does that include his ownership stake? Or does he
have no follow-up questions?
I feel like I lied to my son yesterday. I just want a little more information now about just how much.
Miami Herald confirms Messi's Inter Miami salary, $20 million guaranteed, tops MLS.
Wow.
But he's got to be making 50 or 60 at least total.
$12 million base, guaranteed annual compensation of 20, which includes guaranteed bonuses. And the numbers are annualized.
And TV rights and all of that.
So his total package over 2.5 year contract is valued at $150 million, which includes equity in the club upon his retirement. Dan, you guessed $70 million annualized. That averages out to
That's
75.
Pretty good guess.
Dan is the winner.
Yep.
Dan feel redeemed in my son's eyes now.
Yeah. Congratulations. Okay. Number two, college sports. There was a hearing on Capitol Hill involving college sports and what the future of college sports should look like. And Senator Joe Manchin, he has introduced a bill or draft legislation with Senator Tuberville, the coach. He said at the end of the hearing yesterday, he's not on the Senate Judiciary Committee. He was just allowed to come in and make a special comment that part of why he wants to legislate around college sports, because it's getting hard to root for the kids when they're multimillionaires as freshmen and sophomores. Reaction. Patrick. Dan. Patrick.
I'm gobsmacked. We root for people every day. And this is America. We root for people every day who are multimillionaires. Is there something
I don't mean to cut you off. I'm actually recording from Spain. So this is it's not fully America.
Now,
but just,
now that Messi's gone, there aren't any millionaires left in Spain, right? No, I guess that's a nice soundbite for going after college kids. But if you're looking for the millions and millions of dollars, it's being generated by the kids and none of it is going to the kids. That's also hard to root for. I guess that's what I would say is I find that hard to root for as well.
And you disagree. You think the kids shouldn't be paid.
He's nodding furiously.
I feel like I'm paraphrasing someone on Twitter yesterday, and I want to give credit. I think it was Roger Sherman who was tweeting about this and saying most college athletes aren't millionaires. There's no sign or evidence that ratings are down since NIL has gone in. And what role is it of Congress to legislate the viewing habits of people for watching college sports, and why is that there?
That was in one tweet.
Was better.
Or was that a long? Was that
I think it was a tweet stream. I don't know.
Tweet thread. I think. Another comment made yesterday at the hearing, Senator Cory Booker, in introducing Senator Ted Cruz, said of Senator Cruz that he is the Deion Sanders / primetime of the Republican caucus. Thoughts?
Is that did Ted Cruz take that as a compliment? I'd like to know.
I assume because Ted Cruz took his folder and then high stepped across the Senate floor. So I think he saw it as a compliment.
Was he wearing his sunglasses and hat?
Yeah, sunglasses and hat. Was that it? Was it sunglasses and hat? What was the context of this statement?
I told you that we're not listening. This is about college sports. Patrick.
To be honest, I was not listening. Are we saying, is he saying that because Deion lost a few games that Ted Cruz, is that it?
Wasn't it that Ted Cruz they were voting on some legislation and he had 29 votes to none? And then when he left, they ended up losing the vote. Do you get it? Do you get it?
I get it. I don't know if that's how the Senate works. I haven't been a senator for many years now.
I always thought Ted Cruz was more of the Tommy Tuberville of Senate sports.
But isn't Tommy Tuberville the Tommy Tuberville of?
No, he's the Ted Cruz.
Yes.
I just don't know what Deion has to do with this. I don't know where Deion is. Deion catching strays here, or was that meant to be a compliment?
I think it was meant to be reaching across the aisle, showing that
went to Stanford. So he's talking smack Okay, I get it now. I'm with you. He was talking football smack to Dion and Colorado and the Buffs and going after Ted Cruz. That's what it was.
So Ted Cruz was catching strays when he was really going after
Ted Cruz was catching strays. Actually, I'd like to apologize to Ted Cruz and the whole Cruz family. No, I just I didn't really wholly get it, but it's a good gag. Hey, it's got us talking.
It's given us so much content between Bates, Williams, and now Ted Cruz. This has been gold. Northwestern's football coach, Pat Fitzgerald, fired, filed a wrongful termination suit seeking $130 million in damages for lost earnings as well as reputational damages. You don't need to comment on this. I'm just going to read it and summarize it. If you have thoughts, you can comment, but otherwise we could just go to the next story. But I think it's worth discussing because he was fired for cause by Northwestern. You might remember after there was the big hazing investigation, and he was originally suspended by the president. And then there was lots of pressure from the public and he was then fired. And Fitzgerald sued saying that he was fired, even though there were no new facts, no new developments whatsoever, zero, I'm quoting him. And then Daily Northwestern reported the details of the hazing allegations and said that the president may have erred.
I will tell you, erred is preferred. I didn't mean for that to rhyme. I really mean it. Anyway, continue.
That's a good way to remember it. Brian Garner
taught me that. The great Brian Garner taught me that.
He is great. That's great. With the initial discipline. And then he fired him. And this is a little bit of, not quite, but a little bit of Ray Rice, where there's an initial relatively light punishment, and then there is a public outcry, and then there is a much more significant punishment or suspension. Not comparing what Ray Rice did to what Pat Fitzgerald is alleged to have done, but it is part of this growing body of lawsuits where coaches in particular fired for a cause to try to avoid their millions and millions of dollars in outstanding salary. And then they challenge the for a cause termination. They typically settle, but this one's interesting because it gets into the underlying hazing allegations and not only whether the hazing happened, but whether Pat Fitzgerald knew or should have known or anyone on his staff knew. So I'll pause for reaction or comment. Seeing none. Let's move to the NBA. Oh, no, Dan, go ahead. Sorry.
Because this isn't there talk that Mel Tucker is going to file a similar wrongful termination suit against Michigan State for, I would guess, somewhere in the same dollar figure. And my understanding was Mel Tucker, when he was at Michigan State, boosters had agreed to provide most of his salary. So if he were to win that, would the boosters be on the hook for that, say, $130 million? Or it is the university.
Patrick?
I was just nodding because I thought that was a great question. And I feel like we need a sports law expert to answer that.
Let me see if I can get Mike McCann on to answer that. It is a good question. Generally, it doesn't matter what the source is. If the contract is between the school and the coach, which it is, it doesn't matter if the school had planned on getting the money from the boosters or planning on getting it from some other capital campaign or just used it from their reserves. The school is still going to be on the hook. There are some contract provisions where the coach is being paid to do some other things, like a podcast or radio show, and that might be either part of the separate contract or a separate deal with some other local entity, but in general, the requirement to pay the salary would be on the school. And it doesn't matter that the boosters are the ones who promise to pay the money to the school.
I just have a hard time rooting for these guys knowing that they're multimillionaires.
But they're not freshmen and sophomores. So it's okay.
Oh, okay.
As long as they're
that very clear.
It's the two it's the two part
separation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair.
All right. So let's go to
the distinction.
Yes.
That's the important distinction. It's just their age and educational attainment. Okay.
Yes. Fair. Yes. That was Patrick Egan, by the way. Patrick Egan expressing those views. NBA load management. The league has created the player participation policy because the PPP is just a great acronym that people have such positive association with. So they've got their own PPP for the upcoming season to try to encourage players to play in all 82 games. There was a lot of Patrick is showing off his Pelicans. We are three Pelicans fans on this podcast. My most recent podcast was with Jake Madison, also talking about the Pelicans.
Bola Jake.
And criticizing Scott Kushner. Yep, criticizing Scott Kushner. So it was great. And not criticizing, more just observing the negative things that Scott does. So that was not a criticism, more just an observation. I love Scott. Okay, with that behind us, the player participation policy. Based on a reaction to a lot of players, particularly star players, taking games off because of the belief that they needed to rest in order to preserve their bodies to play a full season and then to play in the playoffs. And so the idea that load management was scientifically supported and that this was needed to protect them in the long term and that this was actually ultimately good for the fans and the league, but not so good if you were planning on going to a game where you expected to see one of these star players and they don't play because of load management, not in any actual injury. The NBA announced within the week, and it was Joe Dumars, so one of Dan's childhood heroes, former Pistons great, that load management is no longer supported by scientific data held by the league, that there is no benefit to resting during these games, and that the league wanted to reestablish a culture of playing in all 82 regular season games. So the rule, among other things, says that if you are a star player, someone who has been an all-star or all NBA in any of the previous three seasons, you have to play for every nationally televised game and the in-season tournament, and no team can rest more than one star for any game. First thing, as a Pelicans fan, that only actually applies to one Pelican, sadly enough. And it's so I think we all know who that Pelican is. Dan, would you like to guess who it is?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's Zion.
Oh,
Patrick. Patrick, was that your guess?
I was going to say Jeff Withey.
you're both correct. Jeff Withey,
yes,
okay. Is another. Yes. Yeah. For or against the rule. And there's obviously been a backlash from players. Kawhi Leonard has said no one's going to load manage me or PPP me into playing. What do you think? What's going to happen? Is this good or bad? Yeah.
It seems to me like it's going to be really hard to enforce because they could just say it's a knee injury or a ankle or something and just have the same kind of pattern as they've had in the past. But in general, it does feel like there has been a malaise around the regular season and that getting players to play more is probably good. I think the incentives for the end of the year awards is along the same lines of trying to incentivize playing more in regular season games. But it's weird to me that it's just coincidental that the data suddenly no longer supports this thing. Yeah. It's saying it supports for years. That's the part that's a little weird to me.
You go data or data?
Data.
I'm a data guy.
You're data. Yeah, data. Data. I err towards data.
Oh, data. So you haven't seen Goonies either. Interesting. I agree with Dan. I think this makes sense if you think of it as an opening salvo, that the ultimate rule and enforcement thereof is just not, it's not going to come out fully formed. But, and frankly, I think the 65 game rule sounds great. I think it's five games too many. I think somewhere in the 60 to 65 game mark is enough. If you played really well, everybody's going to have an injury every season. And so it's a lot to ask for these guys to play this many games. That said, the thing that I get the biggest chuckle from is exactly what Dan said. The fact that, the science has changed. And so now all we're doing is in keeping with the newest, latest, greatest, and best science. Be sure to get your load management vaccine at your local CVS. It just feels a little transparent. And you'd hope for them to just say, hey, we just want our guys to play a little more. We want the players union to play along, no pun intended. And we're not willing to drop down to 66 or 72 games. And neither is the players union. So this is our best solution for now. and we'll tweak it over the years.
Did you just come out as anti-science? Were you anti-vax there?
I'm anti this science, Mr. Pfizer. Maybe I should call you Mr. PPP.
I'm just glad as a Pelicans fan that after Cody Zeller makes the All-Star game this year, we'll get to see him in a lot of the games next year.
Wow. Shots fired at Cody Zeller. Wow. The guy, he listens to this podcast every week, loves it, has his whole family listen to it. And now that just comes out of nowhere. That's tough.
I fully believe he can make the All-Star game this year. There's no sarcasm there.
All right. I can't wait to have Cody Zeller on here and make fun of you and Kushner. This is going to be great. All right. Another NBA story. The Toronto Raptors are involved in a lawsuit with my New York Knicks, my childhood New York Knicks. It's odd for teams to be involved in litigation. The lawsuit here accuses the Raptors of stealing proprietary information. And part of the issue is whether this is going to be heard in arbitration or whether it's going to go stay in court. But the Knicks sued the Raptors in New York in August, claiming that a former employee had been hired away by the Raptors and forwarded scouting reports, links to third-party licensed software, and other materials to their newly hired head coach. And the Raptors said, among other things, one, this should be heard in arbitration because we signed an arbitration agreement that the commissioner gets to hear all these cases. And two, it seems like the Knicks are only doing this as a publicity stunt to just try to curry favor in the public by filing this in court when there's no basis, one, to the lawsuit, and two, to bring it in court instead of arbitration. But of course, if it were an arbitration, it'd be private and nobody would know about it. And so this is apparently some effort by the Knicks to get in the headlines for suing for about trade secrets. I'm not quite sure I understand that part of the Raptors argument, but it does seem a little odd for one NBA team to claim another NBA team is trying to steal its secrets through a former employee, particularly if it's the New York Knicks, because if you were the Raptors, don't you think you would try to maybe steal the secrets from the Warriors or the Nuggets?
Yeah,
a better
team, right?
Yeah, but it is a broader issue, and you don't have to comment about this because I know that you guys are very sensitive to commenting about these types of issues, so I don't want to put you on the spot. But it is a bigger issue about whether these types of cases should be heard in court or in arbitration. The big one going on in the NFL right now is Brian Flores and whether his race discrimination suits against the league and a bunch of teams should be heard in court or should be arbitrated. Also part of a much bigger movement where larger companies tend to want to push things into arbitration, but they can control more easily. And there's a question about whether that's depriving people of their rights. And I actually just taught one of those cases in my contracts last week. So it's all coming together. This is so exciting for me. But another NBA related point, regional sports networks, the potential collapse of Bally Sports for the bankruptcy of Diamond Sports. They are in a battle with Major League Baseball and a bunch of different teams about coverage of these local broadcasts, not an NFL issue because all the NFL games are broadcast on national TV. This is an NBA and an NHL Major League Baseball issue. We here to watch our Pelicans game on Bally Sports. The Jazz and the Suns have already decided to take their TV rights back, and they've created their own streaming service, and they're going to be broadcasting their games on local television and then selling advertisements. What are your thoughts on the Bally Sports experience? And then related to this, the idea that ESPN might be going direct to consumer and maybe partnering with Apple or one of the other streaming services. Good, bad, indifferent.
Patrick, you want to start?
Okay, I'll start. I truly despised the Bally Sports experience. I'll give them credit. Over the course of the season, they improved their streaming product. But man, it was expensive. It was more expensive just to watch the Pelicans than it was to have League Pass, which I also have. And it was frustrating as well that I would travel to Lafayette, where my job sometimes sends me, and I was unable to watch Bally Sports because I was outside of the Pelicans' home market zone, but I was also unable to watch the Pelicans on League Pass because my home is inside the Pelicans' zone. So I actually paid a lot of money to Bally Sports to not really get to watch the Pelicans that much this year. All of that is to say, this is part and parcel to move to the ESPN side of things. This is part and parcel of let's cut the cord so that you can select only what you want. You can watch only ESPN. You can watch only Disney movies. And everybody thought surely that will make entertainment cheaper than when I had to buy 600 channels from Cox or Charter or Comcast. And I don't know. I'd love to see a show of hands. Are you paying more or less now for all of the entertainment that you get? Gabe has raised his hand. So he is paying more or less.
Yeah.
Gabe and I both, up until this summer, were paying for DirecTV and all the streaming services.
Yes.
And this is my first season without having DirecTV. And so I've only experienced Bally Sports for a few preseason games, but I'm not loving the experience so far. I love Joel and AD for all of them forever.
Yeah. Joel and AD are great.
The streaming experience leaves a lot to be desired. And it almost makes me want to resubscribe to DirecTV so I don't have to go through the app.
Wow. You didn't tell me this, Dan. We maybe should have talked about this before we got on the podcast. I thought we were in
sponsorship opportunities here.
Well, YouTube TV was maybe considering it, but I guess not anymore. I've enjoyed the YouTube TV experience for the most part.
I agree.
Same. Most part. Same.
Yeah. I don't feel like I missed having traditional like cable or satellite until the Pelican season started with Bally Sports.
I don't like the delay, though. I don't like that it's so far behind the actual game. Because what I normally like to do, you guys know this, I like to watch it in the arena while I'm also watching the game. And it's just, it's hard. It's hard to do. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, look, it's me on TV.
Yeah. All right. Last couple of quick stories. Kelvin Kiptum. Do you guys know who Kelvin Kiptum is? Patrick was saying yes, Dan. No. All right. Kelvin Kiptum is the world record holder in the men's marathon. And he ran in the Chicago Marathon last week. Dan, guess what time he ran the marathon in?
He ran it.
$150 million.
Under 2 hours. Like an hour, 59 minutes.
Well, now you ruined it. This is like when I ask my wife to guess how much something is and she guesses much higher than it actually is. And
yeah, my wife does the same thing.
All right, let's shut it down. Shut it down.
Yeah, we're done.
2 hours and 35 seconds, which is, as I said, the new world record. Not that impressive to Dan, apparently, but this guy is, he's 23. So he's old enough to make millions, I think, without scorn, but has not run that many races, all things considered. And Joe Pompliano, who has the Joe Pomp newsletter podcast, if for those who are interested, wrote a really interesting short piece about the shoes that these marathon runners are wearing. And other people have written this as well. But apparently he's wearing the Nike Vaporflies. I think these are the Nike Vaporflies that have thick soles made with super light energy returning foam, rigid plates often made of carbon fiber that create a spring-like effect for runners. And so lots of different shoe companies are making these shoes. And lots of runners are now running much faster times than have ever been run before. There is a marathon runner, and if I'll find his name in a minute, who did break the 2 hour mark, but it doesn't count because he had seven people running in a circle around him and they rotated.
It was a wedge.
A flying V.
A flying wedge,
and,
if you will.
Yeah. And it would have been awesome if they were the same seven running the whole time so that all of them actually broke 2 hours, but they had to rotate through. And there was a car driving behind him with a laser pointer showing where he had to be to beat the 2 hour mark. And And he did. He beat 2 hours, but
I thought the car was there to scare him into running faster. Is that not true?
It was actually right behind him, and it would clip his heels if he slowed down too much. But it would clip the back guy in the wedge.
Yeah,
and
right,
so
the wedge.
You got to clip the wedge. And so now I don't know that it's necessarily controversy because these shoes are not illegal. They're permitted by World Athletics, by the International Track Federation, and they have specific requirements about how thick the soles can be and whether you can have more than one rigid structure, which you cannot, and that the shoes have to be available for all consumers for at least 1 month before you can wear them. So all these types of rules, and good for the sport, bad for the sport, that we are now seeing records that no one thought were possible. But I think the previous best before this generation of shoes was probably 30 minutes slower than this-ish. I don't know. I've not run a marathon recently. Dan, you're a marathon runner. You would know. What's your best marathon time?
Half marathon.
Okay.
And I will say I got new shoes before my last one, and I think I took 11 seconds off my time, which I was very proud of.
Wow.
But is this that different than technology updates in other sports, like in golf? Or my niece is a really good swimmer for the Calvin Rest, right? Calvin Knight. In swimsuit,
big name drop there, Dan.
I'm increasing listenership in Southwest Michigan. And I think technology in swimsuits has changed dramatically in the last 10 years. And she spends an incredible amount on these suits for one race, but I think they help reduce time. So I think that this is not unique to running that we're seeing.
Tech suits, I believe, is what they're called. Yes. For swimming. Tech
but,
suits.
But they did
counterpoint.
They did outlaw those in swimming because of how many records were falling. And you had races, I think this is true, but fact check me on this. I believe there were races where something like 3 or 4 people broke the world record or the Olympic record in just that one race. And you're thinking, wait, these are people who 6 weeks ago in a normal event, in a normal swimsuit, swam 2 hours and 10 minute like marathon. And now they're running under 2 hours, which of course
that is untrue. Untrue. I just fact checked it. It's untrue.
He did not. He did not fact check that. But I'm just saying, look, this is the problem. Like it's, you're right. I agree with you. There are technology. We have to figure out where to draw the line, because you could imagine that somebody would come up with shoes that did really propel you forward in a way that was more like a motor vehicle and less like a shoe. And we would all agree that if he had just run a 1 hour marathon, yeah, that's probably not all on him. And so I don't know what the solution is for this, but I would ask the track people first. That's my thing. And I would ask the swimming people about the swimming, and I would ask the tennis people about the tennis rackets. When does it become something where you can't compare eras because it's just the advantage is just too great?
And let me ask you this, Patrick, then who would you ask about golf? Would you ask the golf people?
I'd still ask the tennis people.
I just wanted to make sure
close to the clubhouse.
Right.
The golf people, they're way on the other side of the course. I don't know. They're drinking.
Yeah. All right. Last, I know you guys have never listened to the podcast before, but our last segment that we do on here is the Bram von Polen corner. Bram von Polen is the honorary captain of the podcast. Just celebrated his 38th birthday last week. So he and I are basically the same age. He has been the longtime star defender for Peck Zwolle. He's hurt. His team is on a losing streak. He is trying to play his 500th game for Peck Zwolle. And there's something in here that was worth reading. Oh, the name of his team, Peck Zwolle, they are the Blue Fingers. So the Blue Fingers, Peck Zwolle, I think they play in Wesendlanden Park over there. So that's all I have on Bram von Polen. It's not much to update, but I know you guys were wondering, and I will leave it to each of you. You get one last word, a prediction. Give me a prediction about either the NBA, the NFL, or any other sport of your choosing.
I'd like to take this time to apologize to Cody Zeller, because I really am excited about his signing. My prediction is he's going to be a solid contributor for the team. And when we are finishing sixth place at the end of the season, he'll be a big part of the reason why. So Pelicans out of the play-in is my prediction.
All right. Patrick?
Wow. I am going to predict that we have a new champion in the NBA this season. And if you would like me to predict who's going to win it, unfortunately, I think it's going to be your Boston Celtics.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't think they can do it. I don't think they can stay healthy. I don't think they have the depth.
This is why I'm trying to curse them by predicting.
Yeah. I like the Bucks over the Celtics. Yeah. All right. Good predictions. I think Dan was correct. Dan wins. Patrick had that one wrong. And I think that makes it Dan 2, Patrick 0 for the show. So congrats, Dan, on winning the first ever competition. And you know what you get. Signed jersey from one Cody Zeller. So I will box that up and send it to you. Actually, we kid because we, I don't know why, we love Cody Zeller. We played basketball this morning, for those of you who are wondering. And I would say that the three of us were, either the Deion Sanders of our league or the...
I think you were the Ted Cruz of our league, but... But that's just me.
I will end it on that note. There's a thank you to Patrick and Dan for your only appearance ever on my podcast. Thank you for coming on. We'll have you back to talk about your predictions, see how they went. And then, yeah, this is more like a goodbye. You run into somebody and you're like, hey, we should hang out. But you don't really plan on hanging out again.
Yeah, you don't. So, actually,
yeah, the feeling is mutual. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thank you all for those who requested that Patrick and Dan appear on the podcast. And we will see you next time on SportsWise.